Steve, you feeling all right? You had a little cough there.
Yep. Cold season, apparently. Who knew?
You're trooping through. It's spring allergy season. It's
spring allergy season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the podcast. This podcast is called Stuff Summer Says
Steve.
with Steve. Steve, we are joined by another guest this week. Our booking agent is working hard. He is on fire. And it's Pete Jensen of NHL.com, who covers all things fantasy and also does a little bit of betting stuff. But he's also a very, very proud Penn Stater. And we get into kind of his career and everything that kind of goes into covering fantasy and then also kind of working at the league as well, and what that's like. So we appreciate that. We will then be back with what we're calling our usual Penn State potpourri session. So take a listen to our Pete conversation. It's great. Thank you to him for joining. And we'll be back after this. Steve, we are joined by, I think, our most well put together guest of the podcast with the mic, the headphones. He sounds very official, but it's also partly because it's partly his day job. We are joined by Penn Stater / NHL.com director of fantasy. Did I say that correct, Pete? Okay. And he also hosts NHL Fantasy on Ice, which is a podcast. Pete Jensen, how are you, Pete?
Doing great, guys. Always happy to touch base with you guys from Penn State. I loved my time there. I've been at the NHL ever since I graduated in 2010 in December. I started at the league in January 2011. But it's something at Penn State that has shaped my career to this point, and it's a multifaceted role that I have at the NHL, and I'm proud to say it is, because I learned a lot of the things to help me achieve this at Penn State.
Well, so let's start there. How does one work their way into essentially covering sports through the lens of fantasy leagues?
Yeah, I mean, it was an opportunity that nobody was really taking full ownership of at the time. When I was at Penn State, of course, I was playing fantasy sports like everybody else, through with my high school buddies, college friends, and stuff like that, for different sports, mainly football and, you know, a little hockey, a little basketball, some baseball and stuff like that. But I had the opportunity to start writing game previews, fantasy articles. It became a weekly fantasy article, and then it took off from there, where I was managing the content plan and then created the social accounts, which are now, you know, NHL Fantasy on Twitter and Instagram. So they've come a long way. My role has come a long way, where I'm now, you know, dealing with not only sponsorships for fantasy content, but also betting and the edge stats, like the advanced stats that the league just, you know, developed and put out on their website, nhl.com/edge, this season. So the whole role has evolved, and it all came from me being, I guess, you know, creating my resume and building it with everything that I've done at Penn State through the years. But I, you know, I was pretty versatile at Penn State. I was doing behind the scenes stuff. I was doing play by play. I was doing a talk show. I was writing for the Collegian at different points. There was a lot of different things, like doing Big Ten Network Student U, and all that whole like portfolio that I had definitely allowed me to capitalize on the opportunity that was in front of me. I didn't come out of Penn State, even with all my sports coverage I did there, knowing that I was going to be doing fantasy sports, but it was something that was growing and had a nice trajectory, and the opportunity was in front of me in my particular role at the time.
What, I guess, for those that are uninitiated, that don't follow your coverage necessarily, how does one cover a sport through the lens of fantasy? How does that differ from traditional beat writer covering game story game to game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of the same stuff, like fantasy, betting, real life stuff. There are some intricacies, of course, like knowing what a guy's position eligibility is, or what a guy's category coverage is in the scope of a particular league format, and, you know, different things like that. And of course, production in particular categories matters more than others, depending on if you're doing season-long fantasy, daily fantasy, DFS, or the props market, which has exploded in recent years. And kind of taken on a mind of its own. And that's stuff that has like direct correlation with all the statistical trends and stuff like that. So I like to think that as much as fantasy sports are specific, the information that I deliver and my colleagues that work on fantasy sports through the years in the industry, not just at the NHL, I like to think, and I think it does, it translates really well to the betting market. A casual fan can listen to me on the radio or our podcast and learn a lot about players from not only their favorite team, but also their rival teams and everybody around the league. I think fantasy sports is one of the best things to help people become fans of the players on other teams, so that even when their players and teams get eliminated, their favorite, you know, you're a Ranger fan or whatever team gets bounced in the first round, you can still appreciate the success of other teams. Even if you're rooting against your rivals or whatever, you know a lot more about the teams across the entire league if you play fantasy and if you're dabbling in betting and stuff like that.
You mentioned the fans. I'm curious how aware are players of what you do, right? And where they fit and those kind of things, you know, as a casual gamer or whatever else, you hear about players talking about their ratings and you know, in Madden or something. But in terms of fantasy in the NHL, how aware are the players what you're doing, what you're saying?
Yeah, I think some of the players, you know, follow us to keep up on the information around the league and stuff like that. So I think they're very aware. I think a lot of them play fantasy football. It's one of those things where they, you know, you're not really allowed to play fantasy for the sport that you play in. And that's for me as well. Like, I'm not allowed to, you know, play fantasy for money and or bet on hockey and stuff like that. That's part of the job. But the fan engagement is real. I think these players probably see it in their DMs and their comments when, you know, something funky happens in the game and, you know, it lost someone a championship or, you know, their late empty net goal won someone their weekly matchup and stuff. I think they're super aware of it. And I think football wise, it just gets taken to another level where everything is magnified. A guy kneels down at the 2-yard line to ice the game and gets to hear about it from the fantasy managers out there.
That's true.
Were you a numbers guy in college? Like, were you, was that, cause that's gotta be a massive part to this, right? Like,
I mean, I wasn't like a, you know, I wasn't like a mathematician or anything. I was a avid sports fan and I wasn't like that into any advanced stats at the time, but I've certainly grown to appreciate it and cover it in hockey. And as it's become more mainstream, like, you have to embrace it. You see every single team out there, all 32 NHL teams have like full analytics departments. Whereas when I started working at the NHL, there were just maybe a handful of teams that even had one guy or one girl dedicated to that. So that's come a long way. So, you know, even the stuff I've done this year, those edge stats, they didn't even, I mean, they existed on some other sites out there that you've probably seen if you're a hockey fan, but now they're official and there's puck and player tracking and there's new information. So whether you're covering fantasy or betting like I am, you're trying to bring forth like informative stats that people can take and do whatever they want with, even if it's just food for thought for a regular fan, or if someone is, you know, betting on the Sabres puck line tonight against the Red Wings. I mean, it's like different pieces of data go a long way if you can identify them. And that's something that we've done on the website this year on NHL.com. Like, we've presented that information in a way that is informative and is not telling you to go and bet on a certain outcome of a game. It's just presenting the nuggets, and then people can take from it what they wish and do with it what they will.
You work essentially for the league, and I think you kind of got after it a little bit there, but you have to maintain a sense of impartiality. But you also work in a business or in an era where you kind of have to say, this is probably the better pick, or this is, how do you kind of toe that line between information and, I don't want to say opinion, but it is somewhat a little bit of an opinion, I guess.
No, definitely. I mean, you're like allowed to be subjective to an extent. You, of course, don't want to favor one team too much. And I do say that I've like really grown to appreciate every single team and player in the league. And like, there will be downward trends. There are going to be, you know, situations where you're going to have to put a positive spin on the Coyotes 13 game losing streak or whatever it may be. But because I know the ins and out of not only their lineups, but their prospect pools, and you can always find some good things in something that's going on for any of these teams, even like what the Sharks are doing right now, like fewest wins in the league. They just traded a bunch of players in recent years, right? Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, Timo Meier, Tomas Hertl before the deadline this past March 8th. And then like, but you can say that a positive spin is that they are finally accepting that they need to rebuild and they can move forward, and that in a year or two, they're going to be in a much better place than the downward trend that they've been on. So those are the types of things that we break down on our podcast two or three times a week. And we do have a betting only episode once a week too. So like, we're covering all the different angles, positive, negative, and trying to put different spins on situations with respect to the fact that we work for the league and, you know, we need to be, you know, aware of like that we're not favoring one team more than another.
You talked about mining nuggets, right? Or finding stuff that works for people. When you find something, right, this, you're like, oh, okay, this is great. This is a good stat. Like, what's that feeling like when you know you've got something that people are going to respond to, or that you think is cool that you can't wait to share?
Yeah, I mean, that's what gets you going every day for sure with this job. And it's a lot of fun to cover all these teams and go on different radio stations and networks and talk with the people that are doing it in that market and being able to, you know, hang with any question they throw at you. So yeah, I love that feeling of finding a good nugget, and you have the chance to spotlight that not only on your show, but in your articles or in social media. There's a lot of fun things you could do with those things. But one thing about hockey is like, it always keeps you on your toes, right? You could have a team like the Bruins last year that were beating everybody under the sun, and then they ran into a couple of injuries. The other team, the Panthers, got healthy, and something happened that nobody would have really seen coming based on the entire season at large. So that type of parity in hockey makes it difficult. Like, you think you could find the best stat in the world, and sometimes you do, and then the opposite will happen. So it's something to be aware of, that hockey has a lot of parity right now in the league.
I'm curious as to what your research process is like. What is Pete's day-to-day like, where he's spending X hours looking through NHL.com stats? Like, or is there some deeper Bible that the public doesn't necessarily have that you have access to? Curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, most of the stuff is on the website, and we have a pretty advanced stats page, not only the Edge stats page, which is the puck and player tracking stuff, but we have a lot of per 60 metrics and different, you know, based on strength, even strength, 5-on-5, you know, 5-on-4, all those different things, even strength save percentage, possession metrics that go a long way come Stanley Cup playoffs time, where if you're the top five in shot attempts percentage, or even sometimes you look at those types of metrics where it's like, oh, a team has a super low 5-on-5 shooting percentage this year, but you know they're a high quality team, so then you know they have bounce back appeal. Or maybe like the Canucks earlier in the year, they were just shooting the lights out and you knew there was some regression coming. So those are and you balance like what you've seen so far with the eye test as well, like based on surprises or disappointments, you can kind of find stats to back up the trend that might be happening 3 to 5 days from now, as opposed to just reflecting on what's happened, the positive or negative to this point in the season.
You said the buzzword eye test. And this is something we've talked about on this podcast. And I think as a huge hockey fan, as somebody that pays attention to hockey, I feel like advanced stats showed up first in a lot of ways in hockey. And well, I guess baseball, you know, being really truly first, and then kind of trickled into hockey. And I'm curious to hear, what is your opinion of balance between eye test and what the numbers are telling you? Like, do you have a how do you find that rhythm or that groove?
Yeah, there has to be a balance. I think things have shifted towards numbers and analytics, and everybody wants to have that edge on everybody else, whether you're playing fantasy or betting or in the hockey analytics department for one team. I mean, it's like an arms race all the time. So, but then, yeah, sometimes you see a guy like Rempe from the Rangers just come in and shake everything up and make an enormous impact. I know he was just suspended today for something that went in the wrong direction, but I was also at the stadium series, which was like an unbelievable spotlight, 80,000 people for that Islander Ranger game, something I've never seen. I've been living in this area my whole life. I've never seen anything like that. There's never been anything like that with that many people out there to support a team, and both teams and all four teams, if you include the other game with the Devils and the Flyers. And like that game started off with a bang when Rempe got into a fight with Matt Martin. And it was like something where, you know, you thought fighting was kind of like past its time in the league. And it's like all of a sudden something like that shakes up the team, gives the team a spark, and sets the tone for the rest of the game. So you never really know what's going to happen, and you can never discount the eye test, the good old fashioned eye test either.
All right. Good to know that that's Pete's official answer, because that's about how I feel on it too. You talked a little bit about gambling, and it is, as a fan who's never worked for a league, particularly odd to hear somebody that works for a league talk about gambling, but it's now a part of the culture and kind of a part of being a sports fan, right? Interested, how has that process gone for you? How do you think fans, and do you kind of think fantasy is going to be diminished by gambling, or is there a space for both of them to coexist?
I think there's a space for both of them to coexist. Like when you're talking about either the season long or like any type of weekly fantasy game where it's different and it's based on a larger sample size, I think the props market has certainly diminished daily fantasy. There's no secret about that. I mean, 3-4 years ago, we were really, you know, when betting wasn't really legalized in any states, we were, you know, pretty in heavy with daily fantasy and stuff. And we still cover it, and some people still play it, but the props market has taken over, and the betting market overall is, you know, kind of dictating the whole industry right now, and the revenue from a lot of these companies to go along with it. So yeah, it's been fun to kind of see it all play out, and how even just a couple of years ago when we start, I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago when we started our podcast Fantasy on Ice, and there was no betting talk at all. We weren't really even able to touch it in terms of discussing on our show. And, you know, now we have a weekly daily betting article on NHL.com that myself and my colleague handle. And, you know, it's something where we had, like, through the years we have worked with Action Network. We still work with them. We collaborate with them on our Bet365 podcast, and the article is Betway in the US, and the Bet365 is in Canada. So you have your territories to go along with, like, and there are different legalities that go along with those things. So yeah, one crazy thing is that, like, since I've been doing some of the betting content and stuff, I've actually been working more with like the legal team at the NHL to hash everything out. That's not something that I was ever really doing for fantasy content or in my job at all in the past, but it's the reality that it's like just a different animal, and it has, you know, your guidelines and different things, rules to follow and stuff like that.
You mentioned your versatility on campus as at Penn State, the things you were doing, and then just with that answer about dealing with the legal team, I'm curious, what's been your biggest learning curve during your career? Like, the versatility, I assume, served you well, but where have you had to make the biggest growth professionally to be able to do what you're doing now?
I mean, I think the versatility was always there, and I thank Penn State for that every day for sure. I think like dealing with all the different departments, not just dealing with, collaborating with, there are not that many people at the league that collaborate with like as many departments as I do. And I'm proud of that. I think we've achieved a lot of great success in a lot of different areas that wouldn't be possible without working together. So that type of teamwork was definitely a learning curve, and you have to like find that balance between advocating for yourself and the work that you're capable of doing, but also not, you know, trying to shake everything up and make everybody seem like you think you know what you're doing and they don't, you know, but kind of like reinforce that you can help each other out and achieve some great things. And like the sponsorships we've had are as a result of collaboration between multiple departments. And it's something that's like one of the most fun parts of my job. And that was not really something that I ever dealt with in college, you know, obviously. So you work with a lot of, you know, different people and different fields and different expertise. You lean on them for what they're good at, and they lean on you for what you're good at, and try to work together and find that common goal and then go out there and achieve it.
Nice.
What has been your pinch me, I'm dreaming moment in this job?
Probably there. It was actually like the infancy of betting when the NHL partnered with FanDuel years ago, and it was like a fantasy partnership, DFS, you know, at the time, and also like the early stages. I think they were involved with the Devils and stuff like that. So I was actually like on a podium with, you know, like a panel at the announcement press conference, like with it was me and Jackie Redmond, the great host, NHL Network and TNT ringside reporter. I've been working with her for years, but it was like me and her, Gary Bettman. It was like the FanDuel president, and it was the Devils president at the time. So yeah, that was like probably the one thing that like blew me away for sure. But when you do on air work, like I was mentioning, you always have to be on your toes and stuff like that. I've been fortunate to host a bunch of different like shows. Like this past year was another great one, as the fantasy and betting landscapes are starting to coexist but also be separate entities. We did a fantasy betting season preview show, hour long on NHL Network, so that was pretty cool too. And we did hour long fantasy shows for the past 5 or 6 years, maybe except for the COVID year and stuff like that, but it was kind of cool to be a part of that one. And you know, a full hour show of content that so many different fans around the country and internationally would be so interested in watching.
Was it always going to be hockey?
No, for sure.
Okay, I had thought this. I had heard this, that you weren't necessarily always a big hockey guy. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I went to hockey games when I was a kid. The Islanders weren't very good. I was into the Sabres a lot in high school because they were good at the time, like, you know, 05, 06, when they came really close to winning the cup and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, like even when I was at Penn State, there were so many like Flyers and Penguins fans. And like that was probably my fourth sport at the time. No disrespect at the time, of course, but I was just more immersed in the other sports. But I think it shows people, and I've said this before when I've gone back and talked to classes at Penn State and stuff or on Zoom, and it's like, don't be afraid to, if you're a student, like don't be afraid to embrace an opportunity that might be, you know, in your neck of the woods, but be in a sport that's not as familiar to you. Like everyone wants to get a job at the NFL, but I wouldn't have been able to carve my niche like this and get as many opportunities had I been at the NHL. It probably would have been like a, you know, really minor role at first, getting out of college and stuff like that. And that's not to say that I didn't make a lot out of my role coming out of college at the NHL, because I was like a web producer at the time at night for the first year, and it was not anything that glamorous or anything. It was something that shaped the worker I am till today. But no, the answer is definitely not like that I was dead set on covering hockey or nothing in the industry. I was just more open to the opportunity when I got it.
And the opportunities and growth have allowed you to be there 13 years? Like, is that, it's just kind of grown with you? Or is that accurate?
Yeah, there's been a lot of growth in my role, in the you know, the elements of my role and the sponsorships and stuff like that. Even for a few years when I was managing the content plan for Fantasy, I was, you know, pushing, respectfully advocating for myself and for my role to be Fantasy full time. That didn't happen instantly, actually, far from it. It took, you know, 3-4 years or something like that, from when I started in my role doing other things, and I was kind of taking on those other opportunities as a second job within my own role. So, you know, it took a lot of patience and stuff like that, but it was worth it in the end. And it's been fun to, you know, kind of achieve those different things when at times things have looked like maybe either not as promising or, you know, some frustrations through the years. It's natural when you've been at a company for that long, but you've had, you know, I've had the chance to grow in my role without a doubt, and I'm happy with where it is today for sure.
Awesome. Cool. I want to ask you about college hockey because I know you pay attention to college hockey. So I want to hear from your perspective of somebody that at least appreciates the game on the grander scale, I think is the best way to put it. What is it going to take for college hockey to become even more mainstream? And I feel like there's been strides made, but I think what is your take on that?
I think it's going to take those generational talents coming from campuses and not coming from, you know, necessarily overseas or the OHL or stuff like that. WHL, if you're talking about Connor Bedard, McDavid was from the OHL. Crosby was from the Canadian Hockey League. Austin Matthews played that year, even though he was American, played that year over in like what, Switzerland or something like that. So I think it's going to take, you know, more Jack Eichels, more Quinn Hughes and different guys like that, that have, you know, lit the college hockey scene on fire. And then, you know, hopefully we get a McDavid or a Crosby type player or Bedard type player coming from college. And it's like the Caitlin Clark effect, right? Like just for a comparison, like how far women's college basketball has been featured this year on ESPN and everything. Sometimes all it takes is a generational talent. You have your tried and true fans that love these sports. It's in the fiber of their being, you know, in some of these different sports. And I'm like that through the years. With I love college lacrosse. I love watching Penn State, even when I was at school and they weren't that good. Now they're like perennial top 10, 15 team in the country. It's fun to see how that sport has come along too. But I feel like college hockey, and especially like with the NHL having the international tournament next year and then going back to the Olympics, like that's going to start to skyrocket when they have like a Team USA that really stacks up with Team Canada. When you start to look at the projected rosters, that's going to have a positive ripple effect, not only from the exposure, but just the talent pool going on in the United States right now. It's evening up right now with Canada, if you could believe it, which is pretty exciting for college hockey fans and players out there.
Are you mad that Penn State didn't have a Division I team when you were in college?
I mean, at the time they had so many other teams. I didn't really, you know, I went to some Icers games, but I wasn't like that disappointed at the time but now, of course, yeah, I wish I could have you know, gone to some of those college hockey games when I was actually there, but I have been to Pagoula. I have seen them play. I went to Lehigh, you know, the Lehigh Valley that one year for the NCAA tournament when they lost to Denver. That was awesome to see how far it's come. I've seen them play at Madison Square Garden. This year, I took my son, who's now 4, to his first hockey game. It was Penn State at LIU at the Islanders practice facility. There were like 2,000 people jam-packed into that place. It was awesome. So I'm living vicariously through the current students and stuff like that, but I'm loving that Penn State has a Division I program now. I guess I didn't really miss it because I didn't know any back in the day.
Okay, that's fair. All right, we like to wrap up with some rapid fire questions as it relates to Penn State. So If you'll indulge us for a hot second, we'll get through those. All right. What is Pete Jensen's go-to creamery ice cream flavor?
Ah, do they still have black raspberry? That was
Ooh, I don't know
like
about
my
that one,
big. I
Steve.
used to get like a black raspberry shake when I would.
Well, the shakes are back. They were going for a little while and they're back. So yeah, black raspberry
Okay.
shake is an
Also,
acceptable answer.
vanilla peanut butter. I don't know what the names are, the current names for some of them, but yeah, black raspberry and vanilla peanut butter were like my favorites. Sometimes I would get it and I would drink it on the way to class, whether it was warm or cold. They had a nice selection back
That's the
then.
drink of champions before class. You're good.
I respect that. I have not heard of the black raspberry flavor. I will report back the next time I go to the Creamery, Pete. Okay. You are the czar of Penn State sports for one day. What is your change? What change are you making?
Oh, that's a tough one. So many nice new stadiums and fields. I don't, they've already covered a lot of it. I mean, I guess I would renovate Beaver Stadium, but I know that's already in the plans. Yeah, it's I'm happy to see the baseball team doing better. That was always one team that I felt was, you know, maybe a missed opportunity, or I know it's cold weather, so it's tough, but yeah, I was actually I met at one of the Penn State New York City events. It was pretty cool to be able to meet Pat Kraft a couple of months ago. So I appreciate what he has to, you know, endure and be responsible for, but it must be such a fun job to be able to do that. And I know that it's difficult right now with the NIL and navigating that evolving landscape and stuff like that, but it's pretty amazing to see. I remember like Penn State lacrosse used to play at what, Jeffrey Field, and you know, it'd be kind of, it was like a bigger stadium for what they would fill because the team wasn't that good at the time, but like now they have their own beautiful stadium of their own, and I love when I see those games and like there's, you know, 5,000 plus people and everybody's sitting on the lawn on a Saturday night or a Sunday night. Like Penn State athletics has always been a powerhouse, but it's also come a very long way since even when I was in school from t 2011 back to 2007.
All right, last one. You are back in town for one night and one night only. What bar are you walking into?
I mean, that's tough. I don't know if they're all still there.
It doesn't matter. It can still not be there, so.
Yeah, I mean, I liked is Shandy Gaff still there, or
Yes,
still
it's
there
still there.
for all those other ones too? Those are blasts from the past, all those like Indigo and all those Bar Blue. I don't even know if they're still there
I
anymore.
don't think those two are there anymore.
Indigo's there
It's
in some
probably
shape or
not.
form, whatever it
Yeah,
is. That
that was the one.
facility's still there. Yeah.
Yeah, the one in the basement of
Yep.
by the corner room. I do like the corner room. I remember I used to go there for breakfast, and it was, I'd go there at like after my 8 a.m. class with one of my best friends, and yeah,
This
really
was before, this was after the milkshake? Or are these different days?
different days, different
Okay.
days. Yeah, I would go and get that. I think at the time it's probably more now, but it was like something like $3 for like an egg breakfast, and it was a nice breakfast too at the corner room. So shout out to them. I
Cool.
also like the restaurant on the top. I forgot what it's called, but
Allen Street Grill.
yeah, Allen Street Grill. That was a great spot. Took my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, who would visit from George Washington, and we would go there a lot of the time. So, and a lot of other places too, Brothers Pizza and stuff like that. Those are all a bunch of my favorites, but the bar would probably be Shandy Gaff if it's still there.
It's still there. It's still there.
Ooh,
All
good
right.
call.
Pete, well, this is your moment to plug anything you want. I know you've got your podcast. What else?
Yeah, you could find all our work at nhl.com/fantasy. If you want to find the daily betting article, you could see it on there, daily matchups and odds to watch. So we have the Fantasy on Ice podcast, the NHL Action Network collaboration podcast, which is the weekly betting show. That's been fun, even though, you know, it's obviously I can't bet on hockey. It's been a blast to cover it, and I know it's become so mainstream. So really enjoying that as a big part of my job right now. And yeah. the NHL Fantasy Twitter and Instagram accounts are pretty much run by me and one of my colleagues. So we have a lot of good poll questions there. Trade deadline reaction is pretty heavy right now. The deadline was just a couple of days ago. So it might be tough to look at if you're a Penguins fan. I know it was tough for them to sell Jake Guentzel and stuff like that, changing of the guard, but it's always a blast to cover the NHL. And thanks again for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Pete.
Thank you, sir.
Steve, I think the lesson, I don't want to sound like a teacher here, but the lesson to take away from the conversation with Pete is don't shoebox yourself in because you don't know when an opportunity is going to come up. And he has taken that opportunity and not just run with it, he's sprinted with it, I think. And he does a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, as a hockey fan, it has, daily fantasy particularly for a while, now a little bit more betting, but even in general fantasy, he is a big reason why that conversation has grown in the space, and deserves a lot of credit for that. So that'd be my takeaway today.
Yeah, I think all of it from going to hockey, which might not have been his first love, right? But taking an opportunity to advocating for himself to, as the position has grown, to understanding how daily fantasy, right, is maybe going away, but there's something taking its place and being nimble enough to adapt to that. Like, I think he's a great story all the way around, you know, and I think he related what he does well. And I think people who are following him and look at the thousands of followers that those accounts have on social media that he's leading know that what he's providing is a value added for if you're a hockey fan.
Yeah, really, like I said, I feel like hockey fans in particular are the most, I think baseball fans, probably baseball fans go number one, like in the bigger community, but hockey fans for me, like there's a sense of community around the numbers side of it. And fantasy is a big part of that. I ended up not doing fantasy baseball this year or fantasy hockey this year. I'm going to do fantasy baseball this year. But I think I'll get back into fantasy hockey. It is a lot to keep up with. That's the main kind of not struggle, but the barrier in a different way than fantasy football is. But yeah, I, like I said, I think it's reassuring to listen to Pete's story and hear that you can kind of put yourself out there that way. And it pays off big time because he's on an NHL network. He's a well-known person in the hockey community, and it's because he's hustled his butt off, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
It's funny. I was going to say it's reassuring before you come out. What am I going to say next? It's reassuring that people that care about their job as much as Pete do that are out there, right? So I think that's really cool too.
Okay. Well, thanks to Pete for joining us. Be sure to check out all of his stuff. It's always a highlight when he's on NHL Network and I tune in and I'm watching. I'm like, oh, I know him. Okay, cool. Let's move on. Before we get to our Penn State potpourri section, I'm going to surprise you with something. Steve, it's not really that big of a surprise.
Surprise. Great,
surprise. Surprise. Do you know what this week is?
No. No.
Okay. All right. You feel
I
good?
Feel
okay.
Like maybe I should, but.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. It's fine. So only our blog's 1 year birthday. So.
Is it really? Was there a cake and I missed it?
No. Oh, well, the cake comes on. Well, we're not having a party, but.
Came to your house. Okay.
It came to my house.
Well, it's been a good year for the blog. So good for that. They should be celebrating.
Yes, it has. It's our 1 year anniversary of the blog on Thursday. We'll probably post this episode on Wednesday. So I think in honor of our birthday, our blog's birthday, because it's not our like, it's like our, it's our child, that's our child's birthday. Our collective birthday, I think, is the podcast first episode, which is in October, I think. Our blog's birthday, I think we'll celebrate by knocking some price dollars off of the stuff. We can sell you some stuff. But really what we want to do, or what I want to do in this moment, is say thank you. So looking at the numbers, we had, I think it was over like 22,000 people come to the blog in the first year, which is 21,000 more than I thought. And maybe honestly that was being optimistic. So yeah, it's really cool to see this little project take off. We had a lot of fun. Happy birthday, blog.
That's wonderful. That's the most I've laughed at a 1-year-old birthday party in a while.
Yeah, we. How do you? You've got two grandkids approaching on
neither
your own
one's
birthday.
One yet, though, so I can I'm safe with that one.
Okay,
I'm safe with
all
that
right,
answer.
all right. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, 1 year old birthday parties. We can save that old guy anytime for some later time. Okay, Penn State potpourri. Let's start with wrestling, and we start with an apology by me to Mitchell Messenbrink because I was watching his bout and then decided to just leave the room. Approximately in between the second and third periods, and I missed one of the best wrestling Penn State moments in quite some time. So I apologize, Mitchell.
It was very impressive. Yeah. I thought he was in trouble. I'm sure you weren't alone. I'm sure people maybe those diehards we talked about last podcast with Jeff Byers or two podcasts ago with Jeff Byers weren't leaving the room, but it kind of felt like a leave the room moment, and then all of a sudden he made it one that wasn't. So good for him.
Yeah, that was an idiot move by me. I think going into, or at least the Big Ten championship experience was about what we expected for Penn State. I think kind of we're all just kind of collectively waiting for the national championship or national tournament, and I think there's a lot riding there, and I'm eager and interested to see what happens. The little twist that was also fun this weekend was Carter Starocki's comments. He tweeted, looking forward to a new chapter. Thank you, Penn State, forever. And a lot of people had a panic attack because they thought he was not coming back after his injury. Did you fall for it?
I don't follow him, but I follow the people who were having heart attacks. So, yes.
Okay. Were you anxious? Like,
it felt like pouty, grumpy kid. And I think it turned out that maybe it was pouty, grumpy kid. Right? Because the story changed a couple days, earlier today as we're recording,
yeah.
Right?
So he then came back and said Big Ten title is cool, but NCAA title is cooler. Next chapter, Kansas City. So it sounds like he will be, and it not sounds like he is going to be at the national tournament. Penn State has 10 qualifiers, which is very impressive. Again, I think a lot's riding on this, and it's weird because I feel like there's a tension collectively amongst people that pay attention to Penn State wrestling of like, I hope this works the way we've thought this is going to work all season long. What, again, Mr. Wrestling fan, what do you
think?
Yeah,
I guess
about
that you'd be shocked if they didn't win the national championship, right? Like there's stuff that surprises you and shocks you that you'd be shocked if they didn't. I think the thing that came from Big Tens that surprised me a bit, reassured me. I don't know that I still wrestle with how much I'm a fan and how much I'm kind of just observing, right? But it's kind of silly. I guess I'm a fan for this. It was Braden Davis, right? Like there was a little bit of swagger there that I think a couple of victories that maybe probably should have been losses, and I'm sure he heard about or sees about because these kids know what's going on. I think that seemed to motivate him, and there's a little bit of edge to him. And Messenbrick too, right? Get these two young kids who there's a little bit of edge to, which I think is good. And I'm sure this is one of those instances too, where Penn State fans love this stuff and everybody else is like, thinking Penn State, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's always a little more vocal at nationals than it is other places. And Penn State fans will go in there and be like, why are you people booing us? Or why are you people upset at our success? Okay. Well, it's been a while, right? Like, and it's, I think when people don't get that, I'm disappointed in them. And this team doesn't seem cocky or arrogant in a bad way, but I'm sure other people are going to be there saying anybody but Penn State people, right? Just to see something different. So
I think it was Corey Listoki, maybe, who hosts the Hardcore Penn State podcast. He tweeted something. Penn State wrestling is essentially how the rest of the country kind of can feel at times about Caitlin Clark. Like, yeah, we get it. Like, she's very good. And I think Penn State wrestling is kind of on that verge as well, or probably ad nauseum for those who do pay attention to wrestling. So another week away, well, another week and a half about left until the national tournament begins. So yeah, I'm sure we'll discuss that there. Moving on to Penn State men's basketball, speaking of tournaments, they will on Wednesday night. So again, this podcast is going to release on Wednesday morning. So Wednesday night, they will play Michigan in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. I kind of feel like they need to at least win this game for things not to have a sour taste, that this season to not have a sour ending. I think looking at the line that they are on, they could make a nice little run. I don't think they could make a championship run by any means because it's exhausting to play three straight games. But I would feel a little disappointed if they didn't play Nebraska in the quarterfinals. Like if they didn't make it to that Nebraska game in the quarterfinals, because I think they're good enough to do that.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that. I think that's maybe the expectation. Again, what's the expectation for wrestling? I think the expectation for basketball is when the team plays well, that's what they're capable of. They've beaten the team that they're going to have to draw the first couple games. So yeah, and I think that's as a fan something you want to see. You don't want to see somebody mailing it in at the end of the season. So yeah, that would be my expectation, is that they get to probably get to the quarters. Hopefully things break for them, and that's where they're at.
They seem to have found a groove to them, and I think it's particularly interesting in the dismissal of Kanye Clary, because I don't know, kind of just wonder, like, things have maybe gotten a little bit differently in this first season. And I think all in all, I don't think the Mike Rhodes first year was great, but I don't think it was anywhere near bad. I think we've seen it could have been a disaster at Penn State, and for the most part, he's avoided it and handled it pretty well. So, yeah, we'll see how things go. Go ahead.
You said it hasn't been great. So, what were you reckon? I think we talked about this, and I'm going back and listen, because I what I'm hearing in Center County State College area is people were, oh, well, they're just one game under 500 in the conference. This is really a surprise. I didn't expect them to win, but I think, you know, if they lose the first round, that's a disappointment. If they don't get to the quarters against Nebraska, probably a disappointment. I expected them to almost be 500 in the conference. I mean, this is pretty much what I expected. So when I hear people saying, oh, they've done so much, I don't know. Like, this is what I expected. Less than this, I would have been disappointed.
I said at the beginning of the season, I think I had said or wrote that I wanted them to stay relevant. Like, Mike Rhodes' job is to keep them relevant this season. And I think he has solidly, squarely met that expectation on the head. That's why I say I don't think it's been a great year, because I think a great year would have been overachieving, but I don't think it's been not a bad year, because I think they have hit my expectation for what this season was pretty squarely on.
Yeah, I just, me as well, I think anything less, I'd have been disappointed. So I guess I'm shocked that people are like, oh, they're doing so much better than we thought. Yes, they had to scramble to get players. Yes, they had to do whatever. But after a little bit, you knew they were good. And honestly, if you look at some of the games they lost, they probably won them back. You know, some of the games they just frittered away. Man, if they'd have a couple of those back, all of a sudden,
well,
it was like a really good year.
What was the game up in New York City? The Texas A&M? Texas A&M game that came down to a very controversial call.
Right? Yeah.
Everybody knew it was the wrong call. If they win that game, which I think they would have won that game had that foul not occurred, they are 500. So again, like I haven't looked this up. I could be wrong. I don't ever remember a Penn State basketball player winning Defensive Player of the Year. And Ace Baldwin did that in the Big Ten.
There might be one somewhere. I'm sure Steve's
sure.
The top of his head. But yeah, but I think that's a great thing. I mean, he was glad he came along from VCU, made a great, you know, as they put together cobbled together the roster. That's wonderful. So no, I just wanted to, my sense was people were, and I think Coach Rhodes deserves the credit. He's going to be fine. They're going to win games. I just, they, like you said, squarely met my expectations. Anything less than I would have been disappointed.
Yeah. No, I think that's about where I'm at with it. Okay. That's Penn State men's basketball. Penn State women's basketball lost to Iowa in the, what would have been the quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament. Lost to Caitlin Clark. They did win a game against Wisconsin that they needed to win. But they're really the epitome of a bubble team right now. And here's what I want to know from you, and I have my opinion on it, so this is why I'm asking it, is if Penn State misses the NCAA tournament, is this season a failure?
No. But, man, it looks like next season's really tough. Right. I mean, you're just losing a lot of players. The conference changes with, you know, USC and UCLA coming in, and Oregon's probably halfway decent. Like, it just gets tougher.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been nice to have an NCAA tournament laurel to hang on your walls just in case next year's tough because you're losing, I think, a lot, right? And
yeah.
and I, so I think that'll be, because even with what you're losing, you're going to be young. So no, I don't think so. But again, they had some games that they couldn't figure out how to win that they probably should have won even without Tae Valladay at point guard. And they'd have felt a lot better about this with what's going to happen Sunday, which, you know, I thought they were going to be okay, but then Maryland won on the other side of the bracket. And I don't know, the eye test with this team makes you feel any better about them. Like, I think the numbers and the scoring can all say, oh, they'd be an interesting team. But the last half of the season, the last 10 games of the season, they you know, if you say, oh, are they one of the, I don't know. Like, do you want to see them play? Yeah, they'll be competitive. Yeah, they're exciting, but I don't know. You can say they're going to win game. I mean, I don't know.
It is funny to think about it this way, and it kind of sort of reminds me, like, it's, I try not to change my expectation of a team mid-season. Like, I try to, like if I pick something, and I have said that I want Penn State women's basketball to do better, be a better program, because it's just kind of disappointing. And I kind of was very relieved to see that they kind of sort of figured it out. But if they miss the tournament, yeah, I think this season, in my opinion, is a maybe not a failure, but certainly a miss. I think is the best way to put it, because, like you said, I think Ashley Wusu, I think kind of Marissa, I think, and a couple other of their core are graduating or are gone next season, so you don't really get them back, and you're kind of back to square one. And with the eye test comment, like, I 100% agree, because here's what frustrated me particularly about the loss to Iowa. It was damn near impossible for them to beat Iowa. It's not easy to do. They have maybe the best women's basketball player, at least at the collegiate level, we have seen in the last 20 years, right? But they came out and they looked flat. They didn't look energized. They didn't look sharp. They didn't look crisp. They didn't look ready for this, the moment. And if you're going to lose, it's fine, but you can't get blown out. And they got blown out. Like, they got blown out in that game. And I'll be disappointed if their name is not called on Selection Sunday, but won't be surprised.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I really thought, there was a part of me that thought they had a better shot against, I had a shot against Iowa, because when they played out there, they missed shots. And if they'd have made some shots, you know, if they could have made mm-hmm. shots in that first game, it would have been, and it wasn't, it was closer than this most recent game was. And they still, this most recent game, missed shot. Like, we watched and they were down, whatever it was, 10-0, 11-0. I'm like, okay, Mitchell Bresson McMahon with me. I'm like, okay, I'm done. It's over. Right. And God bless Susan, much more loyal to Miss than me. Why would you say that? Well, instead of, we stuck around, then, you know, 10 minutes left. I'm like, okay, now it's 15. Can we be done now? Like, you know, and then it was like 20. I'm like, not coming back. Can't dig that hole against that team. So,
no.
Yeah.
That was kind of my take on it. Okay. So we'll update you next week on how we finally feel. All right. The last big Penn State news before we get the old guy, young guy. Apparently some guy named Saquon Barkley is going to go play for the Eagles. I don't know why that's important. I think very happy for Eagles fans. It's objectively very cool to see somebody from that half of the state go play for essentially the hometown team, for how passionate they are. I'm just already a little bit annoyed with Eagles fans, though. Like, it's sorry.
What do you mean? You had to start a new clock on being annoyed by Eagles fans? Did you, like, restart the clock? Like, I thought they were just always on the clock, right? Like the NFL draft, when the worst team in the league is on the league, on the fan, or on the clock to pick. I thought Eagles fans were always on the clock to be annoying.
Eagles fans, for me, for, like, the last few years, after their Super Bowl particularly, like they kind of always teeter on that edge to me, and right now they are teetering off the edge.
Their team should be good. I mean, realistically, if you look at it as a Steelers fan, right? Like, they got a guy who's probably going to make a difference. You got a guy who's going to help the team do the same thing they did last year, perhaps, but with a little more to his resume.
Steve ain't confident in Russell Wilson.
He's better than Kenny Pickett, but I don't think that's going to solve their problems.
That's about where I'm at with it too. Hey, they did get an inside linebacker, and
I
that
did
was
see that.
my
That's a
main
good
gripe.
pickup. Yep.
So, okay,
Everybody
well,
else in the conference and in the division got a running back that's going to run at that inside linebacker and his friends.
I'll have to send you the Delco Bro TikTok of the guy that I really want to see this guy's reaction. He's got this like Kelly Green Eagles jersey, and it was the first person I thought of when I
Just
saw
imagine the
Saquon on the screen.
concentric circles of Penn State fans and Eagle fan jersey buying, Saquon jersey purchases.
Well, and it's funny because like I feel like there was a large number of Penn Staters that I know that they necessarily didn't have like a NFL allegiance or weren't diehard in the way like you and I are about the Steelers, but they like switched team allegiances for Saquon to go to the Giants. So now they've developed this passion for the Giants, and what are they gonna do? So I'm interested to see them because there were a lot of Saquon Giants jerseys at Penn State games. So just a thought there. All right. Anything else Penn State wise we didn't cover?
No, I am surprised you didn't ask Pete. When you said you had a college hockey question, I thought it was going to be a Penn State hockey question, but
No, I know he pays attention. I wanted to kind of hear. We deserve a deep dive episode on that someday of my conspiracy theories on how we can grow college hockey in this country, because I have a lot of them.
sure.
All right, this week's old guy, young guy. Steve, I did something that I haven't done in like 3 years today, which was buy razors. Why are they so
3 years.
expensive? Okay, yes.
What did, how did you, how many did you buy
Okay.
3 years ago that you're still stocked?
Maybe I'm not replacing my razor often enough, but I for Christmas, like 3 years, 3-ish years ago, my mom got me a Steelers Gillette, like Gillette in the NFL part, and it was a Steelers razor, and it came with like eight razors or like six razors. Should I change my razor blade more often, Steve?
I think more than 8 over 3 years would probably be appropriate. Like I'm
But
perhaps
I
not the
sh
most well-groomed person in the world, but like,
I
don't they,
shave.
doesn't it get uncomfortable? Doesn't it get,
No, because I shave twice a week.
okay, well still,
How often do you shave?
well, probably depends on who if I'm going to see. Like if I'm stuck at home, there nobody, dog doesn't care, right? So like that buys me an extra day. Yeah, they are crazy expensive. Like, and I haven't figured out the whole Harry's, whatever it is, that was the online thing and whatever else. And now they're available in stores, so I don't know what the difference is. Like, yeah, they are crazy expensive, and I can't afford to buy the factory to make them cheaper. So, and once you've got your little Gillette thing, you're kind of stuck with whatever Gillette thing that is that clicks into the thing that's the right size, right?
Well, and that was the problem. And I was like, well, I could just buy a whole new thing, but the whole new system is like $20. And yeah, it's a racket. That's all I'm here to tell you about.
It's a racket until we find a sponsor who wants to support us, then it'll be a great business model.
I don't know about that.
You
I don't
have
know
to
if we
give
would take
it
on a razor
a
sponsor. We're
shot.
not that
We need to
desperate.
have a deep dive into that. We should need to have a sponsor episode, and you're gonna rule out razor sponsors among all the options of things. That's on your list of not on the list.
It's just like, what about this podcast makes you want to buy a razor?
I don't know. Maybe do you shave on podcast days? Because it never looks bad.
No, like I shaved.
Maybe if we did an unshaven episode, people like Jesus, they need razors, and the podcast sponsor would be like, "Hey, we'll help you out, guys."
I don't know. I'd much rather
Well,
support a local
we are
business,
not gonna.
Steve.
I think that must be the most. That might be one. I should have kept a list. I always tell the kids you should have kept a list of shit you said. We would not accept a razor sponsorship. I can think of like probably some other things we wouldn't accept the sponsorship for before razors, right?
Yeah, there are other
Okay.
things. I
Okay,
don't
good.
I don't but I think I
But
just
yes, they are
that
crazy expensive.
like why would you listen to me buy a razor? Like why would you take advice from me who
Or me, right? Like it doesn't look like big razor man, so yeah.
All right. That's this week's old guy, young guy. Thank you to Pete for joining us. Really appreciate it. Always fun when we can have a hockey guest on. I feel like we've had the like two of at least the in my opinion, the two most prominent NHL Penn Staters. We've had Emily Kaplan and now Pete on.
Yep.
So that's awesome. This podcast was awesome. That's great. The blog is 1 year old, so 1 year old, not 1 years old. It's no longer a 12 or a 12 month old. We can, or no, it is a 12 month old. It's a,
toddler
it's a,
world.
Yeah. That was fun. That was a good episode. So the blog is stuffsummersays.com. On that blog, there is a section called with
Steve.
Steve. There will also probably, like I said, on Thursday, be a little something, something as a thank you. And I'm very excited about the future of the blog and other things that come along with the blog. Some of them I haven't even told you about yet, Steve. And
just like being at home, I found out about stuff that's over the dinner table when people are here that I'm just told, hey, we're going to do this. Who knew?
And you know what? Here's the thing, though. In those situations, you're not all as excited. I promise you'll be excited. I promise you. Okay. So we'll go with that. And then we've got emails. Mine's Darian at stuffsummersays.com. Steve says,
Steve at stuffsummersays.com.
Subscribe, thumbs up, 5 stars. Really subscribe to somewhere over there. You can like hit this little button down there. I put a little button if you're watching, and it, you can subscribe easier. So do that.
And if you're watching this week, it's much better because we mentioned Peach Studio, we mentioned shaving. So this, if you're listening and you got to this point, go over on YouTube and watch it too.
Yeah. So I don't know. I've got Twitter handles. Mine's at Stuff Summer Says. Steve says
at Steve Sampson.
Goodbye. We're out of here.